Today, the real story about Under 16. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, there was a dominant theme of the hastily written submissions to the federal government's one-day review of its social media ban bill that's processing too fast and too far across Parliament. And of course, it's going to have potentially wide-ranging effects on all Australians. This is a significant issue and one which is important to understand from where it came. Probably in a year or so from now, every Australian logging onto Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok, or maybe some other platforms, may be confronted with a prompt that the company will be requiring you to prove your age. But actually, that's even just speculation. The bill that was introduced into Parliament last week and sent off to a committee for a single day received over 15,000 submissions, but it contains no details at all about how it will work, only that the companies will be expected to take reasonable steps to ensure users are age 16 and over. It's interesting that there was a big discussion about whether this is connected to digital ID or not. The communications minister said that Australians wouldn't have to hand over ID when using social media. The actual details will come later through the completion of a trial of age assurance technology in the middle of 2025. And then, with expansive powers, the Minister for Communications will determine what methods will be used and to which platforms they'll apply. Michelle Rowland's Labour predecessor in the communications portfolio, Stephen Conroy, said once that he had unfettered legal power and could make telecommunications companies wear red pants on their head if he wanted. The social media sector might wonder if this is where those new powers may go. Now, having read through the vast bulk of the publicly available written submissions, just over 100 out of the 15,000, it's clear that most experts believe this is an ill-thought-through policy that lacks evidential basis, and it likely won't work, and it will have wide-ranging ramifications for every social media user in Australia. Now, it's worth noting what is said here from the hearing.
From what I see, the balance of mental health and youth health is a balance between access to social media for help and access to social media for harm across those things, and it's never a black and white answer. So I will throw this open to everyone. I think it'll take all of my 5 minutes on one question. Can you each go around and, from your perspective, what is that balance and where does it sit in relation to this bill? So, yep.
So I do not see any benefits for mental health from social media. I've looked really hard at the evidence, and even if there were to be some, I think they are far outweighed by the disadvantages. But for mental health, I do not see any benefits. I had actually prepared something, but that's all right.
An opening statement?
Yes. If you want. But I just haven't sent it.
That's okay. Maybe someone can grab it off you and we can get it photocopied and circulated so everyone's got it. Thank you.
So you don't think there's any upside? Okay.
No.
From Headspace's perspective, I think there is a balance. There's definitely harms that exist online, beyond social media and the internet more broadly, that we're all familiar with in terms of exposure to distressing material and things that can... bullying, all of those sorts of things. The thing that Headspace is concerned about with the social media ban is what we do hear from young people, and the research does indicate, is that there's help-seeking that goes on online. There's seeking out of information with regards to mental health and wellbeing, and definitely with regards to connection, particularly for those young people that may be risk of being disenfranchised, so remote rural communities belonging to minority groups and so forth, so places where they find connection online that otherwise they can't find in real life.
Thank you for your question, Senator. I'm from Project Rocket, and we are Australia's youth-driven movement against bullying, so we work with thousands of Aussie school students every week and hear directly of the harms that I think we're all very aware of. Some of those are really direct harms, like cyberbullying and image-based abuse. Others are more insidious, like unhealthy comparisons, the difficulty switching off, that kind of thing, and exposure to harmful content. And when we hear from psychologists and parents, they are very much confronted with that pointy end. They only see the harms. And I think that's incredibly valid. But as people working with young people every day, we also do see those benefits, that young people are served a range of benefits on social media, from access to vital information, the ability to mobilise around social issues, of course, direct mental health supports, peer connection and belonging. It cannot be understated the impacts that they receive that are positive. And the Australian Child Rights Task Force has actually warned that those who are well-intended policymakers here who are trying to protect children and young people may actually be risking their participation rights as enshrined under the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. So, while we need to tread very carefully, or we risk dialing back young people's rights and pushing them into more isolated, less supported spaces.
Okay. Online, Professor Sawyer?
I think these issues have been beautifully outlined already. I think the harms and the potential for harm is clear, and perhaps I can share later some of the evidence we have from studies in Melbourne that demonstrate perhaps at the greater risk is with younger adolescents in the 10 to 13-year-old age group in particular. But I also think we need to acknowledge that last point around the extent to which young people's ways of making meaning in the world, connection to society, is increasingly online and needing to really balance this and understand that there are also some potential risks.
And Ms. Petering, did you have something, or...?
No, thank you, Nicholas Cabot for his best.
I have a lot to say about the benefits that are not existent as a result of social media use in this age group. Yep. So I'll start with research that what my understanding and reading of the research, first of all, is that the evidence for it preventing suicide is actually wrong and taken from a study that was conducted in COVID in America over a six-month period, where students were partially in school, partially at home, and that piece of evidence that's been submitted in and relied on in multiple submissions to the government is based on students spending less than an hour online during that period, not more than that. In other words, a child was socially isolated at the time that the injurious suicide attempt, that is, a suicide attempt that had some real intent to it, was harmed. So that has been used in and based on for multiple submissions to suggest there are benefits to being online. That's the first thing. The second thing...
Elon Musk X has warned that these new powers could be weaponized by a minister and could limit free speech. X and the Human Rights Law Centre have both raised questions over the lawfulness of the bill. Now, we're told in various media interviews which platforms are in and which are out. For example, is YouTube in or out? But it'll be up to the minister to decide at a later date.
I'm trying to understand if YouTube will or will not be included in this bill. Section 63C defines age-restricted social media platform as the service allows users to interact, YouTube does in the comments. Allows users to post material, YouTube does. Significant part of the purpose is to allow interaction, YouTube does in some channels. Do you consider YouTube is included in this bill?
This, Senator Roberts, underscores the broader challenge of this broad definition that does encompass a range of services, and also the discretion it affords the minister in relation to making those determinations. I might hand to my colleague, Dr. Duxbury, who may have more to add around some of the questions we have around that discretionary determination of what is in scope.
So, Senator, you're absolutely right that the bill doesn't make it clear who is in or out of scope. And that's, you know, to us, that is a really serious flaw in the bill. It is absolutely unclear who is in or out, and we don't know what criteria will be used to determine these exemptions. The explanatory memorandum suggests that some services will be out of scope, but that will not occur
until a future date, and that date is unknown.
Thank you. And speaking of the explanatory memorandum, I think it's on page 21, says that children can visit sites that do not require an account. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding.
Thank you. You've said in your point three of your submission, Parliament is being asked to pass a bill without knowing how it'll work. No regulator worldwide has done age assurance successfully yet. Nowhere. And almost we've got almost no time to discuss this in public, so I don't know how you're even here. Thank you for being here. The government's exploration of age assurance, you say in the bill, through its trial is not yet complete. Only a year ago concluded that these technologies were immature. Could you expand on that, please?
Well, not only was the conclusion that the technologies were immature, but also that there were risks about the reliability of the technology and their impact on digital inclusion. And I think we heard earlier about the fact that because these requirements will apply to all Australians, the impact will be felt not only by young people but also by other Australians who will be required to age verify before they get access to a very broad range of services.
Thank you. Next question. This is quoting from your submission, your opening statement. But if we are proceeding on this fast-track timetable, what is most important is that the bill contains structures for future consultation. As drafted, you go on to say, the bill only requires that the minister seek advice from the eSafety Commissioner before making legislative rules. However, given these expert warnings of youth harm from social media ban, that is, the harm from the ban, the unknown technology and the privacy implications, further consultation with the community and technical experts is vital. Did you suggest amending Section 63C of the bill to include an additional requirement for a minimum 30 days of industry and public consultation before making legislative rules? Could you expand on that, please?
As quickly as you can.
Sunita, did you want to take that?
Jenny, I'll hand over to you,
okay.
But there was an additional reflection we had over the weekend that we didn't have a chance to include in our submission issued on Friday evening that we might touch upon here, in addition to what you've read there, Senator Roberts, around the need for reasons for decision. Let me hand over to you, Jenny, to elaborate there.
Yes. Okay. So, look, we have recommended additional consultation because we think that in the current context, it is quite likely that the bill will proceed and proceed quickly. And, you know, we understand that this committee will only have one day to basically ponder that question. And if the bill is going to proceed on its current timetable, then frankly, adding in a consultation requirement seemed to be the only thing that was, you know, likely to improve, given, you know, the complete absence of detail as to how it will be implemented. However, another possible improvement to the bill would be to require additional transparency regarding the making of these decisions. So I believe that the Minister has power both to include particular services within the scope of the bill and also to exclude them. And to the extent that legislative rules are going to be, or legislative instruments are going to be made to flesh out the detail of the bill, then I think additional transparency could be very helpful.
Complete absence of detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Roberts.
The government has been at pains to say people won't be required to prove their age via the government's new digital ID, or that they'll be required to hand over licences or passports to every social media platform. But there is nothing in the legislation which is preventing that. That is one of the key takeaways from the short four-hour hearing on the bill on Monday. It came after a question from one of the few sceptics for the legislation from the two major parties, the Liberal National Party Senator Matt Canavan.
I just have some technical questions about the bill. First of all, a question that no one's been able to answer for me is, what happens if someone moves here from another country, say a working holiday visa for 6 months, they're using an Australian IP address to log on to their social media apps, this person's an adult, they're not a child, but as we've gone through, you need to verify everyone's age. Are you obligated, how are you going to tell, or are you obligated to check that person who might be from Canada or something and say, hey, what's your age? Do you have to do that under this legislation?
This isn't... Excellent question, Senator Canavan. And the answer, I'm going to provide perhaps will be unsatisfying, and that I'm not sure personally, and this is why we need to consult with the expert with experts. Certainly these questions around IP addresses, VPNs, how we circumvent this technology, extraterritoriality questions, these are all things that need to be considered.
And Senator, I believe that the bill talks about this requirement in relation to people who are resident in Australia or ordinarily resident in Australia, if I'm correct.
Yep, so you wouldn't, no, you wouldn't probably have to do it. But then what's stopping me just setting up an account and imitating an American or a Canadian and then just using that account? You'll never have to check my age, right?
Well, this is one of the reasons why we think it's really important that the trial that's only recently commenced is completed, so that some of those questions can be, you know, thoroughly interrogated before we go ahead.
I reckon my 10-year-old will work it out. Because they're just going through this. All they have to do... How does it work? You might be able to answer this question. How does it work right now when you set up, say, a Facebook account? Do you get asked what country you live in?
I believe so, yes.
Right.
And I believe...
That's just... You can just put down whatever, presumably.
Sorry.
How do you check that? Do you actually check it or...?
I can't speak for Meta, but what I would say in a general sense is that services would also look at the IP address of an account that's being created. But, yes, you raise really important points around travel and relocating countries.
But they could use a VPN and then get an American account.
And then certainly.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. It's great that we're rushing this. I just want to ask about parental consent. I notice in Florida they've introduced a law very similar to ours, but their law says for 14 and 15-year-olds they can have accounts as long as they have parental consent. Is this something that you've all at all looked at? Because I just know there seems to be a gap in our laws that there's no role for parents here at all. Is there a way that you could only provide accounts to children under 16 with parental consent?
It's a great question, Senator Canavan. Some in the industry have experimented with this. I don't have that information to hand as to how they go about that and its effectiveness. Perhaps Jenny, not sure if you have anything to add to this question.
What I can add to this question, and Senita is correct in that respect, some platforms are experimenting with parental consent, is one of the things that we are looking at in the design of the phase two codes is actually at the kinds of controls that are available to parents for using different kinds of services, including on devices. Now, one of the challenges of that is that there's as yet no sort of like international or uniform standard, industry standards around what those sort of parental controls should be. But that's an area where I think should also be a focus when we're designing future legislation, because those sort of controls do give parents a level of discretion in relation to children's internet use and young people's internet use. And the advantage of them is that they can help parents customise the experience in a way that is appropriate for the individual child and the individual child's developmental capabilities. Now, they're not the only solution here. You know, there needs to be, obviously, proactive obligations on platforms to ensure a safe experience, but that is one piece of the puzzle.
Senator Canavan, last question.
Yeah. Just turning to another part of the bill around the destruction of information collected for age verification purposes. There's an obligation on providers to do such, but they are actually allowed to keep or use such data in the event they have the consent of the user. Now, the consent has to be voluntary, informed, current, specific and unambiguous. My question is, what does that amount to? In practical terms, does that mean if someone... Does that mean just in your terms of service, which no one ever reads? Does it mean you'll have a checkbox where you say, yep, your consent for this to be used? How are you going to get that consent? And is this something your members want? Would they be fine getting rid of this? I don't understand why we are at all allowing you to use such information for other purposes in a bill that's notionally about age verification.
Thank you, Senator Canavan. I'm glad you asked this question because it speaks to some broader issues here. I'll make three brief points. One is that we do have a broader reform process of the Privacy Act underway. The first bill is before Parliament in relation to that reform process. I believe it does not cover these questions around consent and how we define it, and that will be a part of the broader reform process. The second point I want to make here is, while it's heartening to see there are some considerations for privacy in the bill, some of the implementation questions that come to mind when I read this provision is that this data, knowing a user's age, is also really important for services to deliver age-appropriate content and services. So there's a challenge there in relation to how that operates in practice, because we understand the intent here is for that information to solely be used for age verification, but certainly platforms need to be able to ensure that they're not showing users adult content when they are younger. The second piece of this, when a bill like this is accompanied by a penalty regime as is proposed, companies also need to be able to demonstrate their compliance. And so the destruction of this information may also preclude companies from being able to demonstrate to the regulator that they have in fact complied with the law.
However, the Coalition indicated on Tuesday that it secured agreement from government for amendments to the bill to prevent people from being forced to hand over IDs to social media platforms. TikTok has said any requirement to hand over IDs is tantamount to requiring every social media user in Australia to have a license to access social media. At the Monday hearing, there was only one witness in favour of the bill, and she had campaigned for it well before today. Everyone else who wasn't a government agency or one of the politicians asking the questions was against the ban.
Gaming sites, because they already carry age recommendation. In fact, some video game sites are MA 15 plus, 15 plus, not 16 plus. Who will have to change, your bill or the MA 15 plus rating?
The bill doesn't require them to change, no.
Nothing will change.
No, because gaming isn't caught by the new definition, then there's nothing that requires the gaming systems to change.
So social media is 15 plus, but gaming is 15. Social media is 16 plus, video games are 15 plus.
Yeah, the policy here is to treat games as different to social media. For some of the reasons we talked about before, they are seen as a different form of content consumption and engagement to social media.
Doesn't this sort of indicate to people that this is not, this bill's intent is not about what the government says?
No, the bill is definitely about what the government says. It imposes a firm age limit of 16 on account creation for social media for all of the concerns and reasons outlined about the damage that's being done to under 16s through exposure to social media. Games also are subject to classification rules, so they have their own regime they have to comply with now.
And they're subject to the broader Online Safety Act as well.
Yeah.
Senator Roberts, I'll get you to wrap up.
Last question.
Mm-hmm.
Parental controls. I understand that there are parental controls that parents can buy, or sometimes free, in the form of apps that watch over what children are watching. What alternatives are already available for parents to control children's social media and control the exposure? And did you evaluate them? And why don't you just hand the authority back to where it belongs, the parents, because they can do a better job of parenting their child than government can?
Senator, the very strong feedback from parents that we received in this consultation is they do not want to bear the burden or responsibility of making decisions that should be better reflected in the law. At the moment, parents often refer to the 13-year age limit. That's part of the US terms of service. For privacy reasons that apply in Australia. That's often used to say to their children, you can't have a social media account until you're 13. So it's really important for parents to point to a standard law, an age limit that will apply to everybody. And it's also feedback we've received from a lot of children as well, that they would rather that there was a universal law that applied to all children under the age of 16 rather than have a situation where some children have it and some children don't, and then all of the harms that we're aware of through exposure to social media continue to magnify. We also don't want a situation where there's any question that parents have some legal responsibility in relation to an age limit. The very strong view of the government is that that responsibility should be borne by the platforms, not parents.
We also have some...
platforms are in much better position to control their services than parents.
So we want to put parenting in the hands of social media platforms?
The parents have said to us that they have a very strong view that they want a 16-year age limit and that the platforms are better placed to enforce that because it's their platforms.
How much notice did the parents get
to give
their comments? Because we got 24 hours notice of submissions, closing of submissions.
We've been
I'll just add that we do have evidence that only, 58% of parents were not aware of social media parental monitoring and only 36% actually searched for online safety.
So wouldn't it be better to educate the parents?
Pardon?
Wouldn't it be better to educate the parents?
We are educating parents too, and that's part of the digital literacy and other measures that we're undertaking. So education is important, but it's not enough.
I mean, educating parents about the controls already available that will keep the control over their children in their hands, parents' hands, not usurping and putting in government's hands.
I think it just comes back again, Senator, to the point that we've made that the very strong view here is that platforms should bear the responsibility for imposing or following an age limit, not parents who don't have as much information about how these platforms operate than the platforms themselves.
And thank you.
What's the status of YouTube? Is it covered by the definition on 63C?
It is covered by the definition as it stands, yep. But then there will be the rule that will carve out platforms that are specifically for health or education purposes. So if it is deemed to be primarily an education platform, then it will be
So it will just be YouTube
out.
Or Rumble or Vimeo be carved out as well?
We haven't got the exact definition of that rule. That's not drafted, as Mr Chisholm said earlier, but as the Minister has indicated...
This seems like an enormous amount of power to give the Minister with potentially anti-competitive issues here, so YouTube could get a special treatment, but other similar video sharing platforms like Rumble or Vimeo may not. Is that correct?
The Minister will be required to take into enormous account amount of power on that. So.
Yeah. Are those exclusions disallowable?
Yes.
But we can't amend them, of course. If YouTube's categorised or covered by 63C, returning to Senator Roberts' question, what is Pornhub covered by? Why wouldn't it be? It's just explicit material, but it's covered.
Yeah.
So it is covered.
The first limb of 63C1A is that the platform's sole or significant purpose is to enable online social interaction.
But if YouTube's covered, I mean, it has a video sharing for non-explicit content, video content, why wouldn't Pornhub be covered? Is Pornhub covered?
I think they have very different purposes.
Yeah.
Well, explain that to me. I think this is...
Under the definition, we wouldn't see Pornhub as falling within scope. It's not
how?
Seen as social media.
Just explain to me in simple terms how, if YouTube is covered, how would... another video sharing service with explicit material, admittedly, not be covered?
So, again, Senator, it comes back to the commitment that the government's already made in relation to
No, I'm not
YouTube.
Asking for a commitment. I'm asking in the law. We've got to pass the law, not government's commitments. So in the law, how are these two services different?
I think YouTube and Pornhub are completely different.
I agree with that, but how are they differently defined in the law?
Pornhub is a site for accessing pornography, which children are not permitted to access.
Show me in the law where that is excluded.
Well, it comes back to the evidence before about how Pornhub is subject to a suite of other rules and regulations.
Again,
and
is
also,
that in the law?
And I just want to sort of go through this very carefully. There's a question of whether Pornhub is treated as a digital platform as part of this this bill. And the evidence is that we don't see it as having the characteristics of social interaction. It's a site for... I don't speak from any experiences,
This is very vague and unclear to, I think, any reasonable person about what's in and out. Apparently Snapchat's in.
Snapchat would be in.
But yet in the law, messaging apps are out. So how does Snapchat get in?
Because it has a significant purpose of social interaction.
Yeah. How's it different from WhatsApp?
It has a particular social feed as well as a map feature in addition to the messaging.
So does WhatsApp now. Why isn't it included? There's different things on WhatsApp you can choose, feeds and stuff, as a signal.
I think what Snapchat has the features of social media that trigger the definition and is very much therefore caught.
Won't kids just move to these other apps? I haven't got enough time to go through that. Will kids just be able to use a VPN? What's stopping someone just using a VPN and logging on as a Canadian and signing up to an account?
Well, that comes back to questions of extraterritoriality and ensuring that the Commissioner continues to be supported in any litigation that's undertaken on that front.
It also comes down to the reasonable steps, because there is the technology to know where somebody is physically, so it might be...
Even if you're using a VPN?
Correct. If you post a photo saying having a great time on Bondi Beach...
After that,
the native platform data that we were discussing with Senator Sharma could reveal that you are, in fact, in Australia.
Okay.
And I'll ask you to try and wind up now.
Just one final thing then on the tender doc, this will be another one for the Privacy Commissioner, I think. In the tender documents for the age verification trial, it mentions that... let me just get this up, sorry. It mentions that that there's a testing of using biometric information, including facial age estimation and voice analysis. Take me through in more details what that amounts to.
Some of the products on the market that purport to do age assurance involve estimation using facial features, voice analysis and other biometric information.
So that means like a 180 degree like you do for your face ID? Is that what that means? Not just a selfie?
I can't speak with any details, but there are... companies and tools on the market which purport to be able to accurately estimate a child's age using things like facial features, proportion of bone allocation, distance between eyes, etc. I mean, there's a range of different utilising, I should say, machine learning and AI capabilities. There's a range of different
tools.
People with existing accounts. People with existing accounts, will they have to give this biometric information to keep their accounts? Like a 50-year-old have to do that?
Where the platform doesn't already hold the age inference data that provides them, constitutes a reasonable step, it is possible they will be required to provide some further assurance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It appears the legislation will fly through the Parliament, though. After a week of consideration, it already passed the lower house overnight. Just over a year ago, in the wake of several high-profile data breaches, the government had suggested age assurance raised too many privacy and security concerns for everyday Australians. And in fact, the eSafety Commissioner's own position has previously been that no country has been able to solve this problem. So, has anything substantial in technology changed since then? Well, why the change now? It appears to be the result of a combination of a months-long wedge from the opposition pushing the government to adopt the policy, public polling backing the ban, although that's suspect, and a News Corp campaign that, in a horrible chamber-style coincidence, just happened to be launched not long after Meta announced that it would not enter into new deals to pay for news. In fact, on Tuesday, News Corp's tabloid front pages across the major cities and an editorial in The Australian urged the Parliament to pass the bill. Passing the bill now, and it's not coming into effect until after the next election, serves two purposes. It takes it off the table as an election issue, and it puts responsibility for implementation on the next government. The concern over the bill from members of Parliament has seen odd pairings. The Greens, One Nation, some Teals, and some others such as Gerard Rinnick and the Coalition MPs who already have concerns over the eSafety Commissioner's powers. Some want more regulation to make the platform safer for everyone. Others want the digital public square to be more free of regulation. But on this, at least, they're a unity ticket. However, they will probably not have the numbers to stop this going through before the end of the week. So my point is this. Firstly, this should be given more time to get it right clearly there is work that needs to be done to protect people on social media platforms, but the current approach is so flawed as to be remarkably stupid. In my submission, which probably will never see the light of day, I made the point that there are other routes possible, that we need a digital bill of rights, and that we need more transparency in this whole process. The second point is, I want to underscore again, there are big voices here, particularly the Murdoch press, who are pushing for this. And this is, if you like, a battle between old media and new media playing out under the guise of protecting kids. And the third point is, we have to see this in the context of a broader set of issues about digital freedoms and digital control. And I do think that the link between central bank digital currency, digital ID, social scores, and all of the other stuff is not just a made-up link. This is real. And there are definitely people from the international non-elected groups like the World Economic Forum who believe that more digital control is required and are pushing it top down. And unfortunately, the politicians are thinking about playing the short-term game rather than seeing the long-term game. So shame on our parliament, shame on both sides of the House, both major parties in particular, who are leading us up the garden path here once again. And frankly, this should not be passed. There is a very important discussion to be had, but it needs to be had properly. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.